Welcome in, everybody, to That Movie Show. Mike Went, Liam Stryker, live from the beautiful deck here. If we have a nice day, we might as well sit outside, right?
Yeah, right. It's the first nice day of the year.
I think it's officially summer here in New England.
Yeah, we skip spring.
Yeah, we do. Well, that's what we do. We bounce in and out.
Yeah, right.
We have a little bit of spring, a little bit of winter, then a day of summer, then we go back to winter.
Yes.
It will snow tomorrow.
It'll snow tomorrow, and then we'll be back to 90.
Nothing like running a Boston Marathon in a blizzard.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the Boston Marathon's Monday, right?
Yeah, it is. As you do.
Yeah, today, right? It happened?
Today is beautiful.
Yeah.
Today is a very nice day, which is why we decided to do this outside. And today we are covering Galaxy Quest.
Galaxy Quest.
And I am not prepared at the moment.
Oh, well, Galaxy Quest is a personal favorite of mine. Mm-hmm. It's one of those movies where I watched it, like, it was one of those, like, my parents pawned me off on one of my friend's parents during the day, and they, like, brought us to a movie, and...
It's the 20th anniversary, by the way.
It is the 20th anniversary. But we would go and we would see it, and we saw it in the movie theater. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, oh, this is a really funny movie, and I really liked it, but you never heard anybody talk about it.
Very underrated.
And then all of a sudden, like, you know, something like 10 years ago, everybody's just like, yeah, and then this Galaxy Quest, and it's just like, I love that movie.
Now, if you followed the show at all, you know both of us are Star Wars fans.
Yeah,
were
correct.
You at all a Star Trek fan? Because I was not.
I was not either. I found Star Trek to be too boring comparatively as
a
child.
I always felt it was the generation before me.
Yeah.
Because it was a 70s TV show.
Right.
You know what I mean? That turned into a movie, and because I never got into it, and
right.
because by the time I was old enough, I think there might have been 3 movies at that point.
Okay,
and I was like,
yeah.
And then Star Wars came into my life, and I'm like, right. nope.
Yeah, so
better.
I saw Star Wars, and it, you know, hit
despite
all
the fact
of...
I wasn't alive when Star Wars came out. I just saw it before I saw any
right.
Star Trek.
You know, seeing Star Wars, it was very, very exciting, and, you know, there was lightsabers and flying and ship battles and,
sure.
and laser guns and stuff like that, and Star Trek...
And we didn't have any of that silly Shatner kissing when we had brother and sister kissing.
Yeah, right.
We're down with that.
But you look at it, by the time I got to Star Trek, it was the next generation.
Okay.
And it was a much more serious show, and it was on at a time when I didn't watch TV, you know what I mean?
Like, so you didn't get into that either?
No, so I didn't get into Star Trek because it was the next generation, it was a little bit more serious, mm-hmm. and then on top of that,
it had Will Wheaton.
It was before that it was before I understood, like, TV scheduling. You know what I mean? Where it's just like, oh, this show is on that I like.
Okay.
You know, not knowing that it always comes on at that time.
You didn't set your VCR?
Yeah, I didn't set the VCR.
All right, well, now that I am prepared, let me get my business out of the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, cool.
Because my OCDs are so...
I know. I was just
to.
Vamping for you.
I appreciate that. So Galaxy Quest had a budget of $45 million. Box office of 90.7. It was a success. Came out on Christmas Day, 1999. So we're celebrating the 20th anniversary this year. It was directed by Dean Parisot. Let's see. Written by David Howard and Robert Gordon. And starred Tim Allen, Sigourney Weaver, Alan Rickman, Tony Shalhoub, Sam Rockwell, Daryl Smooth Mitchell, or Chill Mitchell. Excuse
Chill
me.
Mitchell.
Daryl Chill Mitchell. I learned that on the behind-the-scenes DVD today. His nickname is Chill. Anyway, David Newman did the music. And
right.
this is Galaxy Quest on That Movie Show.
Oh, exciting.
It was a barrel of fun.
Oh, yeah. This movie's a delight. It's such a delight.
And I found in my research a lot of the fun moments in the movie were taken directly from Star Trek, like, memoirs, like Shatner moments.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, right off the bat, Tim Allen going into the bathroom at a convention and hearing people talk about how he's a nobody and how he hasn't done anything happened to Shatner in 86.
Oh, I could imagine.
Yep.
You know, this is one of those movies where, you know, back in 1999, I didn't know any of this nonsense,
sure.
right? You know, and
because
I didn't...
as we explained, we didn't really watch Star Trek.
Right. One, I didn't watch Star Trek, and two, I didn't really know a whole much about the movie industry, you know what I mean? And the business, if you will.
Because the internet was still in its infancy.
Yeah, you know, and so you didn't
really...
We were
really... still in AOL chat rooms.
Oh, yeah, we were. It was weird.
I was still trolling the Eric Idle chat rooms.
Oh, very fun.
I love Eric Idle, but it was fun because his fans were very serious for some reason.
Okay.
I got banned from AOL many times for trolling Eric Idle chat rooms.
That's very fun.
It was just the easiest way to get your friends' accounts banned.
That's very fun. Very.
I'm that kind of a dick.
Yeah, very fun. You know, so watching this years later and kind of knowing the deal and, like, you know, having gone to conventions and stuff like that.
See, I've never been.
I haven't gone to a Star Trek convention.
No, but I haven't been to, like, a single one.
Oh, really?
Like, no, I've never done it. I've wanted to do... I know they do Rock and Shock in Worcester every year, and it's one of those things I've wanted to do, but just every year when it comes around, I'm like, eh.
Yeah. So I've been to, you know, you go to Comic-Cons and
I have to go and spend $50 on a, you know, Kane Hodder pitcher?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Right. You look at these type of things, and that's exactly what they are.
And then Comic-Con's in San Diego, so that's a whole commitment.
There is a Boston one that I've been to, and it's the same thing. And there's Rhode Island, which is probably the biggest one in New England, is Rhode Island, and they get better people.
So what you're saying is I need to do more research.
Yeah, you got to do a little bit more research.
And now that we have a show, get credentialed.
Yeah. Well, I got credentialed for both of those things.
Oh, you special. Nice invite.
You are invited. You're invited to at least one of them.
To the next one, apparently.
The next one.
I always got that open invite to the next one.
Yeah. To the next one. But you look at it, and you see these people that are like, yeah, I only know you because you're this character.
Sure.
And they're sitting behind a table, and people are getting pictures with them, but that's about it.
Right, right.
You know? And so you watch stuff like that actually unfold, and you see how fans interact with these people.
Mm-hmm.
And then you watch Galaxy Quest again, and you're like, yeah, that's exactly
how it is.
That's exactly what it is, where it's like you can see that somebody like Alan Rickman hates the fact that it's like, I am a fantastic classically trained actor, but nobody aside from these people here care because people only see me as the weird, funky alien guy. Right.
I mean, Alan Rickman, literally in Galaxy Quest, is obviously doing Spock.
Yeah.
He's obviously doing Leonard Nimoy. But his attitude towards not only the show, but the fans, and the fact he has to continue to do this and continue to spout off his catchphrase feels very reminiscent of how Alec Guinness felt about Star Wars after doing it.
Correct.
To the point that Alec Guinness wouldn't do interviews about Star Wars.
Right.
You know, much like John Cusack wouldn't do interviews about Con Air, which you can find in the archives, newageinsiders.com.
That's so funny.
Alec Guinness felt the same way about Star Wars. He felt that way about the thing you love.
Yeah, right. Right.
He wouldn't do interviews about it because he was a classically trained English Academy Award winning actor.
Yep.
Who took a paycheck that became his legacy.
Yeah. It became literally...
Like, that's what it was. Like, for him, it was a paycheck.
It's Yeah, of course. Because it was towards the end, and it was just this paycheck. They were shooting in England, might as well, you know? And he ends up... It ends up being the thing that people don't even realize that he's an Academy Award-winning actor because nobody knows that about it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's a fun trivia fact.
He was From Here to Eternity, right?
Correct.
And Bridge Over the River Kwai was another one.
Yes, that was another one.
Wonderful movies. I suggest you go see them.
Yeah.
And give Alec Guinness the respect he deserves.
Absolutely.
Or just watch Galaxy Quest and see what he really felt about Star Wars.
Yeah, right.
Because it's very reminiscent of Alan Rickman, excuse me.
Alan Rickman.
And how he portrayed his character.
Or how Harrison Ford feels about Han Solo.
Yeah.
He hates Han Solo.
And now that he's dead, he loves him.
Yeah, right. Because he can't be him again.
Never have to come back and do that thing again. I don't have the Force.
Yeah, right.
I'm not going to come back as a ghost.
Yeah, I'm not going to come back as a ghost or anything stupid like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So we start the movie with basically an episode of Galaxy Quest.
Yeah, it's the show.
Which is very much the Star Trek TV show.
Yeah.
With the, you know, moving side to side to simulate.
It's cheesy.
Fun fact, I'm just going to jump right into all the stuff that I watched in the DVD, because there was a really cool behind-the-scenes feature. They built the set for the command center.
Right.
And it was built on this gigantic gimbal. So the actors didn't really have to do any acting. And one of them, the guy who plays the lead bowl cut alien.
Okay, yeah.
Was like, yeah, I was so happy they did that, because watching five actors pretend to fall over never works, because someone falls in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
But this was the whole ship was actually moving around, and Sigourney Weaver even said all we had to do was just hold on.
Yeah.
Alan Rickman said the reason his character keeps looking up every time the ship moves is because him, Alan Rickman, was terrified that the lights were going to come loose and fall on his head. So the whole time, every time the ship moves, watch Alan Rickman, because he's just looking up at the lights, literally.
Trying to avoid getting hit by a light. That's very funny. This movie falls into the category of way better than it should be.
Absolutely.
Way better than it should be. This movie should have been long forgotten, like, you know, some sort of sci-fi movie from the 80s.
Absolutely. It was part of that that mid to late 90s, what I'm going to call Tim Allen Renaissance.
Yeah, sure.
Tim Allen was doing a lot of, I guess, surprisingly successful movies.
Yeah.
Like, he came off of Home Improvement, which was one of the biggest goddamn TV shows ever.
Yeah, it also helps that young Simba was in it.
Well, it also shouldn't have worked.
No.
Home Improvement as a show shouldn't have been the biggest thing ever.
No.
But it was just in that generation of Seinfeld shows about nothing. It's like,
right.
It's just the common man doing
common man
stuff.
And he's more relatable than Roseanne or Al Bundy.
It was, yeah, exactly. It was very much in that vein. But, I mean, he had 94, The Santa Claus.
Yeah.
95, Toy Story.
Oh, yeah, that's
there's,
right.
There's some duds in there. But even
Jungle
was a hit.
Yeah.
It wasn't a good movie, in my opinion, but it was a hit.
Oh, see, as a kid and the target audience, I loved that movie. I haven't seen it since, but
it was such a hit. He continued on with Toy Story 2. He was still doing Home Improvement at the time. Galaxy Quest came along.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he was just in those movies. The Santa Claus became a franchise.
Yeah, Santa Claus became a franchise, obviously.
Again, shouldn't have.
Obviously, Buzz Lightyear was a thing.
Shouldn't have been a franchise. Toy Story, I mean, Toy Story is incredible. It's,
right.
It's one of the greatest Pixar movies, if not the greatest Pixar movie ever.
Yeah, it also changed
how animation is done.
So that's very important.
But yeah, I mean, Tim Allen had that weird, successful run of movies, and this was part of it.
Of course.
I love the fact that they got Sigourney Weaver.
Who is the sci-fi scream queen.
She is literally the woman of sci-fi. And she has enough of a sense of humor that she was able to just not give a shit and have so much fun with this character.
Well, that's the best part about it is again, you could have taken, you have a bunch of actors. I mean, Alan Rickman's in this movie. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Tony Shalhoub is in this movie.
I have a lot of trivia bits on Tony Shalhoub's character.
But it's just like, you have so much potential for it to be, you have so much potential for it to be bad.
You have Dian Bihar of Orgasmo fame.
Yeah, right. Right. And then, of course, Sam Rockwell.
Sam Rockwell. Academy Award winning Sam motherfucking Rockwell.
Yeah, who would have thought?
Crushing it. As what was he?
He was the red shirt.
He was crew member number 6.
Yeah, that's right. That's what he was.
Crew member number 6,
and
who was Guy Fleegman.
Yeah, Guy Fleegman. His entire bit throughout the entire movie that he just thinks he's going to die the whole time.
Is awesome.
Is the best.
It's so much fun. Including the point where they pod down to the actual spaceship. And the aliens show up, but they haven't used their cloaking device. So they look like just, you know, giant slugs.
Yeah.
Which all of these, by the way, were not CGI.
Oh, really?
They were actual Sam Winston's effects shop.
Cool.
Came in and did these. And Sam Winston, of course, did Alien and Terminator and all those things. And they were actual, because on the behind the scenes, you see them as the rubber creatures.
Yeah, cool.
There was, of course, blue screen and CGI used, but
yeah, right.
These were real. In that scene, the actors didn't know, or it was just completely improvised, that Sam Rockwell was going to scream.
Okay.
Like he's dying, and if you watch it closely, Sigourney Weaver freaks out when he screams. Like,
so
it's one of those like shit your pants type moments.
Yeah, right.
You know, like in Snatch, where they're like, all of a sudden the shotguns go off and you just make a stupid face. She made the stupid face because she didn't know that scream was coming.
That's so funny.
So we realized that the episode we're watching at the open of the show is the quote-unquote lost episode where they reference the Omega 13.
Yeah.
They end the episode with activate Omega 13, and then it says to be continued.
And it never was.
Sam Rockwell, hosting the convention, says, and that was the lost episode number 90A or something like that of Galaxy Quest. And we realize we're at a Galaxy Quest convention.
Right.
And
it's years later.
We're waiting for actor Jason Nesmith.
Yep.
Who plays Lieutenant? Is it John Quincy Taggart or something like that?
Yeah, it's something Taggart.
Something Taggart. I'll get.
I think Quincy
name.
Taggart is right.
Quincy Taggart's definitely right. I think I'm missing his first name. It's not John.
Yeah, Tom. No.
Kevin. Bill. Steven?
Steve.
Come on, scroll
James?
Faster.
James?
God damn it! It's listed as Jason Nesmith.
Yeah.
Whatever his fucking name is, I'll get it later. But we're waiting for him as his co-stars. Are all in full makeup.
Yep.
We see the disdain on Alan Rickman's character's face because, once again, he had to strap on this rubber goddamn head.
Yeah, and it probably took forever.
Which, fun fact, he never took it off in the movie once, including when there's a scene in his apartment talking to Sigourney Weaver on the phone.
Yeah.
He's still wearing the head as if it's like a hat.
That's so funny.
Also, great glue that they use because that shit stays on the whole time during battles.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it gets a little fucked up at the end, but it's still on his head when they show up at the end, which I have a lot of thoughts on the end.
Okay, yeah.
But finally, Jason shows up.
Yep.
And
they all hate him.
They all hate. Well, it's one of those things. It's. I wouldn't call it hate. I would just call it...
resentment, maybe?
A little bit of resentment. A little bit of he needs to eat his own shit a little bit.
Right.
He's definitely, he believes his own bullshit. He believes his own hype.
Yeah.
He doesn't realize what kind of a joke he actually has become.
Yeah,
so
right.
So he believes, because he really only surrounds himself at this point with these conventions where he is basically Elvis walking on stage
right.
in 1970
yeah.
as the king of all things. And he doesn't really realize what his reality is.
Yeah, right. He doesn't realize that outside of this convention hall.
So it's more
care.
That because you see, even in the convention, when they finally go out on stage and they're signing autographs, Sigourney Weaver is looking at him like almost admiring the fact that he's so dimwitted and that he so believes his own hype.
Right.
She's like, he really loves this. And of course, you know, what was it, Tommy?
Yeah.
Looks over and he's like, yeah, almost as much as he loves himself.
Yeah,
but she's sitting there smiling at him like, you know, and you can kind of relate to that where it's like, I wish I was that like up my own ass where I didn't have world problems.
Right. Of course.
You know, like my whole world is this little bubble of Galaxy Quest people who love me.
Yeah, right.
You know, nobody in my world hates me. I have no real problems. I'm a successful TV actor who did a great show. I'm living off the royalties and going to these conventions for about 10 grand a pop.
Yeah, and I'm making a ton of money.
I'm making a ton of money. This is great. Everybody loves me. And then, you know, he goes to the bathroom and realizes, oh, fuck, I am
nobody.
I didn't live my dream of being an actor.
Yeah.
I'm a caricature.
Yeah, right.
Of myself.
I'm a joke.
Right. Which, as we mentioned earlier, was a reality for a lot of these Star Trek guys.
I can imagine, yeah.
You know, and I mean, the bathroom scene came straight from Shatner's memoir.
Yeah.
Fun fact about the movie, actually, while we're talking, it was originally developed for Disney by Harold Ramis.
Oh, wow, that would have been a good movie.
Well, he was signed on to direct, and he didn't want Tim Allen, and it was actually Tim Allen that made him leave.
Really?
Yep. I'll find exactly who he did want for the role.
Because you figured that Tim Allen would have been a good Tim Allen probably always would have been a good choice.
Tim Allen was a good choice. Tim Allen did a great job.
Yeah, he also kind of fits that mold a little bit, you know, because I'm trying to think of somebody that around that time that would have been great.
His original choice, I still haven't found the
because Bill Murray's not the right answer.
No. Harold Ramis' original choice was Alec Baldwin.
Oh, okay.
And Baldwin turned it down, and at the time would have worked.
Yeah.
Because if you remember at the time, Baldwin was very much in shape. He'd just done The Getaway with Kim Basinger.
Yeah, right.
But he
Basinger.
I say Basinger.
Yeah, no, I know.
But I think you can say it either way. It's like Demi or Demi.
Ooh.
More
Willis.
More Willis. Hyphen.
Kutcher.
Keep trying to find it.
More Willis Kutcher. Is that her full name?
I believe it is now. More Willis Kutcher. She's getting all of the divorce money.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Oh, come on, Mike.
She's
scrolling live on the show.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's real. It's real.
So real. Usually I have a computer doing this, but since we're on the deck, I kind of fucked it all up.
Oh, we're on the veranda. That veranda show.
That veranda show, everybody. The sun is beaming in my eyes right now.
Yeah, of course. So basically,
yeah.
We end up finding out.
Vamp for a minute.
Yeah, so I'm just going to continue with the plot of this movie because I'm pretty sure 10 minutes in.
I'll get there.
You look at this movie and these group of aliens who are posing as they're from a galaxy far away.
They're not posing as really anything. They just show up and they're aliens.
They kind of fit in.
They fit in with all the costumed fans.
Yeah, and so they come up and they basically recruit Taggart to come because they're like, "Hey, we have a problem. Like,
right.
we're this downtrodden alien race, and we need a hero. And you're the hero that we need because we've seen all of the historical tapes.
The Thermians.
Right.
I'm never gonna remember that for the rest of the show.
No, never." And so basically, Tim Allen having Taggart having had this experience in the bathroom and not feeling super great about himself. Kind of feels like he wants to surround himself with some people that really appreciate him.
Got it.
So he's, yeah. Okay, cool.
Because we've talked about the bathroom thing.
Yeah.
Harold Ramis wanted to cast Alec Baldwin. Yeah. Turned it down. Steve Martin and Kevin Kline were both approached. Kevin Kline turned it down for family reasons. And then Tim Allen was cast, which caused Harold Ramis to leave the project.
Weird. That's weird. I don't know why Harold Ramis would be hating on Tim Allen that much.
Maybe, I don't know, Coke? Yeah,
probably.
Maybe he probably Coke-dealed him.
Yeah, probably.
Probably a bad Coke deal in the early 80s.
Yeah.
Google it, kids. Tim Allen wasn't a great guy.
So
funny comic, but... Ew.
So basically, Galaxy... So they beam him up to the ship, and...
Yeah, well, he thinks he's going on, like, an appearance.
Yeah, he's making an appearance or something.
They show up with a limo.
Yep.
One of my favorite low-key moments is when they're in the limo, and he's trying to hit on the...
Yeah, the female alien.
The female alien, who is played by a very funny comedic actress that I'm spacing on her name. It was originally supposed to be Jennifer Coolidge.
Okay.
Stifler's mom.
Yeah.
Was originally supposed to be that character. And as he's like, he keeps hitting on her, he's like, hey, so what's your name? Missy Pyle is the actress. One of those girls. You know,
yeah, right.
Like, oh, yeah, she's great.
Kind of like Sam Rockwell was one of those guys.
At the time, he very much was. And... She forgot her voice translator on the ship, apparently.
Yeah.
And she just blurts out this shrieking noise.
Yeah.
And him sitting there hungover as fuck, just looks up and down and goes, okie dokie.
Yeah.
I'm listening, but it's going to seem like I'm sleeping. Keep talking. And puts his head back. Yeah. Like, that's fucking fantastic.
Yeah, it's great.
Wakes up on a ship.
Yes, he just wakes up on a ship. And
thinks he's in somebody's elaborate garage.
Yeah, because it's a...
Because Justin Long's crew were the ones that booked him for...
Right.
For a special appearance type of thing.
Right, and
privately.
So he thought it was them.
Also, Justin Long's first movie.
Yeah, that's right.
Same with Rainn Wilson, who's in this.
Oh, yeah.
First movie for both of them.
Good for them.
Rainn Wilson basically playing an extra, didn't speak. He had a deleted scene where he spoke, but...
Yeah, but unfortunately, I've been there, man.
Yeah.
I've been there.
We've all spoke on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, right. So then he wakes up on a basically a down to scale replica
of his
ship.
What's called
the
protector?
The protector, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
And so basically he doesn't know what's going on, but it's like a real deal ship.
Yep.
And
he thinks he's still playing a role.
Yeah,
he thinks he's playing a part for these guys that are gonna, you know, give him a couple $100 or something like that to just kind of act out
being the captain.
You know, Shatner stuff.
Yeah.
So they put up a screen, and it's the bad guy with amazing prosthetic special
effects.
Oh,
yeah. The evil aliens in this
amazing
are awesome looking.
Stan Winston. God bless.
Yeah. And he thinks that he blows them up.
Because, yeah, he's just like, all right, throw the blue cannons and the red cannons. And, you know, and I love the fact that he's sitting there drinking his Coke the whole time, and he tosses it to one of the aliens and goes, and you know what? Throw that at him, too.
Yeah.
And it just gets up and leaves. And he's, yeah. He's like, yeah, we got him. All right, where's my limo back?
Yeah, right, we got him. Let's leave. And then we find out that it's like, no, like it's a real deal situation. And so he basically needs to talk the rest of the crew into coming on board.
Where he finds them at the grand opening of a computer store.
Yeah.
Computer stores used to be a thing in the 90s, kids. You can Google it.
Yeah, you used to. Here's the thing.
CompUSA,
yeah, everything,
Circuit City.
Everything's on the internet. How do people get a new
Nothing
computer?
Beats the Wiz.
Oh, wow.
That was a thing.
Oh, wow.
That was a thing. It's now with Bernie and Phil's and Saugus.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Get the Saugus wings.
There you go, baby.
But, yeah, so he talks the rest of the crew into getting up on board the ship.
I love how they do it, too, because they immediately tell them to fuck off.
Oh, yeah. They're like, no.
And they all get
dumb.
In the van that's going to take them back to, I'm guessing, their cars. And they're sitting there, and it was Tommy who says, you know, can you imagine him he must be really hungover offering us this thing. And then Alan Rickman goes, do you really think it's a real job?
Yeah.
And then they all sit there and ponder for a moment that, holy shit, if it is actually a job, we're out of work actors.
We're
not letting him. And that's exactly what they say. It's like, you're either taking all of us on this job or none of us.
Yeah, right.
Hence, and then they hit the pods.
Yeah, and so they get up there, and it's the real deal. And it's a fun moment of, like, self-realization.
So Tony Shalhoub is the last one to get potted down.
Yeah.
And this is really the first moment of many that you get a glimpse of a deleted subplot.
Okay, yeah.
Because this movie was originally a potentially hard PG-13.
Yeah,
it's rated PG, but a lot of violence was cut.
Yep.
And you can actually see, if you can read lips, a lot of curses were dubbed over.
Yes.
There's a number of shits. Sigourney Weaver has a fuck that was dubbed over. But there's a subplot to this movie that Tony Shalhoub's character is a massive stoner.
Oh, yeah.
And it was cut from the movie, but you see glimpses of it. Like, this is the first one where he gets beamed down. He just goes, oh, that was a hell of a thing, man.
Yeah.
And now watching it again,
yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
you'll just see glimpses. Like, every time he's just like, all right, he's the dude.
Yeah, he is. He's basically the dude.
He's the
sci-fi time.
Version of the dude, because he was a massive stoner in the original cut of the movie.
That's pretty funny.
And yeah, and even like the scene where they all go up there and then Saris, the bad guy, confronts them. Like, Tim Allen's, you know, he's a little scruffed up because he just got back from the rock planet.
Yeah,
but all of a sudden, he's thrown into a room and he's spitting blood and his shirt's all fucked up. And it's like, there was a very violent fight that happened that we're not seeing.
Right.
And sure enough, it was revealed that, yeah, because they really wanted to go hard on family friendly.
Yeah.
So they deleted any types, because, I mean, you can see Tommy's character says shit a bunch of times.
Oh, of course.
That has just been dubbed over to either it or this or that. And then when the Crushers, that scene.
Yeah, that one.
And as soon as they turn the corner, Sigourney Weaver turns, and in the movie, oh, screw that. But you can read her lips as clear as day, and it's all fuck that.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, they wanted to avoid even a PG-13. Yeah, they wanted everybody to see this.
Which ultimately,
and
I think, worked out. Yeah,
it still fucking works. It still works as a family-friendly movie.
This movie, you know, that type of situation kind of helps these movies sometimes. You know what I mean? Mm. Where it's like, I don't know if this movie is as endearing if it's played for a hard PG. You know what I mean? If they're all, because sometimes
the violence probably would have hurt it.
Right.
And I think they test screened it with violence as well.
Yeah, you know.
And that's one of the reasons. Same with the stoner stuff. I think they tested it with all of that in it. And it just, I guess the families just didn't come out for it.
Yeah.
And, you know.
And so you tone down the violence, and now it's a much more.
And it still works.
Yeah, it still works, and
I'm
it's
not
a much
any
more
of this
endearing
as a
movie.
Negative.
Right, exactly. You know, then, because that just is always people, you know, want to talk about this when they're talking about TV shows and movies and stuff, where it's just like, yeah, just let them go and it'll be better. And it's like, that's not necessarily true. We see that a lot when people talk about pro wrestling, right? Is like, oh, we need more blood and more violence. And it's like, well, I don't know if that's necessarily true.
Need more sex.
Yeah. Hot lesbian action.
Love it. Love it.
Oh, God, that hurt. So,
don't
yeah.
Don't do Vince on a dry throat.
Yeah, no, don't. Also, just don't do Vince. That's a double entendre, friends.
Well.
Hey, now.
If you will. Where are we?
So, everybody's up on the ship now, and so they're realizing that this is a real spaceship that they're, you know, and it's controlled.
They're quickly realizing that this is like this is real. That, like, he wasn't just drunk fucking around.
Yeah. You know, and this is kind of crazy, and yeah, I forget how we end up getting to the rock planet, but that's the next thing that ends up happening.
The ship runs out of whatever the power that they need, and it's powered by a stone.
Yeah, that's right.
And there's one on the planet that can get it. So they got to beam down and I don't know, goop down, whatever you call it. They basically
transport
in, like, oversized condoms, kind of like Naked Gun.
Yeah.
And
that's so funny.
Yeah, there's a Naked Gun reference.
What a great movie.
Deep diving. So they find these little blue baby things.
Yep.
They think they're adorable. They think they're cute. They realize they eat each other. It's gross.
Yeah, it's really gross.
It's gross and violent. And they find the rock thing. They push it onto the ship. But there's like a monster or something that's not going to let him take off. So, of course, you know, Tim Allen's got to be hero.
Yeah, he's got to be the hero, baby.
And him and Alan Rickman keep going back and forth about stealing lines and stuff like that and stealing my best moments. And then he knocks him out and blah, blah, blah. While on the rock planet, though, another actual moment that they reference Star Trek is when they first get there. Alan Rickman's character is holding the transponder or the GPS for whatever it's called. And he's going in one direction, and all of a sudden he's like, oh, and turns it around and walks in the other direction. And Tommy, I keep forgetting the actor's name, but his name of the movie is Tommy. And he goes, you were holding it back backwards. That rubber head and all that English accent, I thought you were actually smart under there. It's a reference because in the first season of Star Trek, Leonard Nimoy kept holding his communicator backwards because he didn't know.
Yeah, that it was.
He wasn't familiar with all the props at that point. So there's little Star Trek Easter eggs in there.
That's pretty
funny. I had to research because I didn't watch the show.
Yeah.
But Tim Allen fights the rock monster, manages to get his shirt off.
Yeah, he ends up going all the way through the combat. And
Tony Shalhoub gets high and saves the day.
Yeah, he ends up being able to beam him up at the last second.
And that's when we get his start of a love interest.
Yeah, with that chick.
With the female alien that we referenced earlier, which was going to be Stifler's mom.
Yeah, which would have been interesting.
I think it would have worked.
Yeah.
Especially seeing her in a Best in Show.
Yeah.
Her Best in Show character would have worked as the alien.
Yeah, it would have.
I think she's fantastic.
I do like Stifler's mom.
Jennifer Coolidge is a treasure. American treasure.
She is an American treasure.
She is. But yeah, so we get him back and we realize that Saris, the villain, has taken over their ship.
Yes.
And he has their main dude strapped to a thing.
Yeah.
And he's electrocuting the fuck out of him.
Yeah. And this is where
this is the violent scene that was very heavily cut.
Right. And there's also the part where this is where it stops being lighthearted and fun.
For a moment.
For them.
You need some sort of moral or, heartfelt drama.
Right. And so, you're looking at this with a movie. Well, because they're fucking around and getting to be play hero.
Right.
You know what I mean? But
in reality, they're just people.
Right. They're just people. And, Tim Allen has to basically tell these downtrodden and hopeless aliens that these tapes that you watched.
Historical documents.
Yeah, these historical documents that you fawned over and basically
based your life on.
You based your entire life and the hope of your entire race is pretend.
Yeah.
They're not, it's not real.
And the way Saris has him do it is wonderful because Tim Allen's being kind of vague.
Yeah.
With his explanation, he's like, oh, well, it's the historical documents, they're a TV show. And Saris just leans in and goes, he doesn't understand.
Yeah.
Explain it as you would a child. And it's so
heartbreaking.
Fucking cutting.
Yeah.
As he sits there and says, we're pretend. It's a cardboard set. The ship is a model the size of a peanut.
Yeah.
It's not real.
And the just a person that has had a character anyway that's had a glowing smile the entire time is just crushed
instantly.
And you just look at
it's literally it's the equivalent of telling a child there's no Santa Claus.
Right.
It's the cinematic equivalent of that.
Oh God, it was.
I'm sorry, there is no Santa Claus.
What?
I'm going to need a year.
Yeah, I'm going to need some time.
This is going to cost you in therapy.
Yeah, right. But it's heartbreaking. And, this is the realization, at least for these characters, as to what do we want to be? What do we, who do we want to be?
Well, they're stuck in a situation that they cannot control, but they have to make the best of it, for lack of a better term. And they have to fight.
Yeah.
They have to fight. And so Saris devises a plan. He's going to blow up the ship, and he's going to basically what happened in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, where they were sending the Ravagers out into space as that's how they were killing them.
Yeah, they
were going to do
oxygen.
That with these guys. So they were going to lock them in a room and basically the garbage chute and open up the doors.
Right.
Well, Tim Allen and Alan Rickman come up with a great plan that he references apparently happened on the show, episode 17 or something like that, where they start, sending jabs at each other, breaking each other's balls a little bit. You're a hack, you're overactor, et cetera, et cetera. And they start stage fighting.
Right.
And in the midst of a stage fight, he grabs a pipe, bashes one of them over the head, knocks the gun down, traps the two guys in the thing, open up the airlock. Another great stoned Tony Shalhoub moment. He's like, oh, man, door was a little sticky. I'll get my guys some WD-40 to fix it, man. All right. Well, hits the button. I'm like, how am I the only one that knows he's high right now?
The other part about the Tony Shalhoub character, which is so funny, is more so than anybody on the actual show. He embraces his role on this ship so much.
Because he's high.
Yeah.
He's just buying into it.
Oh, it's the funniest thing.
I mean, it looks like he's just chill and buying it, but he's high.
Right.
That's what people don't realize is he's just stoned being like, this is the coolest fucking thing I've ever seen. Because he's basically playing the Scotty role.
Right, he's Scotty.
He's Scotty from Star Trek. But he's stone Scotty.
Yeah.
And he's just so into all this. He's making out with a lizard woman.
Yeah. Oh, God. It's so funny.
Octopus woman with Sam Rockwell watching just being totally gross. We haven't talked enough about Sam Rockwell.
No, we haven't.
Speaking of American treasures.
Sam Rockwell.
Academy Award winning person, Sam Rockwell.
Oh, God.
He is a gem. This is like, this is my favorite style of Sam Rockwell because he did this. And he did Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy right around this time as well. And it's that dim-witted, dumb as shit, but kind of sleazy at the same time.
Yeah.
Guy. And in this one, his name's actually Guy.
Yeah.
And it's just so funny to watch him maneuver around these other bigger actors.
Right.
Because he's basically playing an extra who's wound up in the lead cast.
Yeah. Well, that's the funniest part is that he was a red shirt. Mm-hmm. And red shirts iconically in Star Trek get murdered.
Before the credits.
Before the credits. Yeah. Like
Or before the first commercial break.
Right.
And that's
yeah.
what he says. And I was in episode, because they reference an episode, and he loses his shit. And he's like, why'd you have to say 71? Why'd you have to say 71? And they're like, what's the big deal with 71? I died in 71. He's like, he meant 51. I'm sorry.
Yeah, right.
But he died before the first commercial.
And it's so funny watching him reference that he's going to die in every situation.
Every situation.
He's like, I'm going to die. I'm going to die.
But the funny part is, towards the end, when Saris actually kills everybody, he's the only one that doesn't get killed.
Right.
He's the only one in that scene that doesn't get shot, which is kind of, I don't know, ironic?
Ironic,
is that
yeah.
the definition of irony?
That would be, I guess. And so, yeah, he makes it out alive, which is the best part about it.
Sure.
And maybe I'm misremembering this movie and confusing it with another one, but he ends up in the main cast at the end for the reboot.
They reboot it.
Yeah.
And he is, because that's where we learn his last name, because there's a whole scene where they keep telling, no, Guy, you are important. And he's like, really? You don't even know my last name. And Tim Allen's like, nah, come on. I mean, you got one.
Yeah.
And then at the end, we see, I don't know, they actually give him a name or something like that. But as blah, 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 it's Guy Fleegman.
Yeah.
Fleegman.
Fleegman.
Which, again,
name.
I'm not going to pull my phone up because it would take too long to scroll, but it's in reference to an actual Star Trek red shirt that was Guy something man.
Yeah.
So it was referencing one of those guys who was on Fleegman. Like probably 5 or 7 episodes, something
like
that.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, so Saris takes over. They got to fight. So they're rising up.
Oh, and it's funny because you get something, you know, the moral, the thing that shows you that the moral compass.
I have the high ground, Anakin.
Yeah. Yeah, don't jump. I'll cut you in half and leave you in molting mud.
So gross.
Yeah, gross. And he's just going to scream, I hate you, as you walk away like an asshole. That's a Star
Bring
Wars.
Bring him back. Are you sure? He's kind of like an eighth of a person.
Yeah. Don't worry. We're going to make him mostly man. A machine.
We will control him.
Yes, we will.
Ooh, my Palpatine's actually good right now.
Yeah,
that's
good.
Not bad. I like that.
That was pretty good. But
moving on.
The moral compass of this movie is also kind of determined by Justin Long. By Justin Long.
Yes, it is.
Because before all of the nonsense with the aliens.
I love Justin Long in this.
He's very good. He's
so endearing.
He is so endearing.
He plays that innocent. He plays this role.
Right.
So, so well.
And so before he gets abducted by the aliens, Tim Allen basically breaks this kid's heart and tells him too.
Right after he was in the shitter and heard how awful of a human being he is and nobody really liked him.
Yeah.
He came out and was just, you know,
a dick to Justin Long.
Speed signing autographs and he shut him down. He's like, dude, it's a fucking show. Eat a dick.
Right, because the entire time Justin Long is asking him like very intricate questions about the show.
And the ship, more importantly.
And the ship, more importantly. And so he just basically shuts him down.
Tells him to fuck off.
Yeah, it's stupid. You're wasting your life.
It's a show.
Dumb.
It's
a show. It's a fake. It's stupid. You're wasting your life, kid. No. Shut up.
Yeah.
So then he calls him because,
in short, eat a dick.
Yeah, eat a dick. And so it's funny because we flash forward to the end of the movie and he has to call Justin Long.
Justin Long saves the day.
Because Justin Long is the only person that'll know the intricacies of the, like, chomping mechanism.
All right, I have issues.
Yeah.
I have issues. In 1999, Justin Long and his group of friends, their internet technology was far too advanced. Skype wasn't a thing. They instantly were having video chats. They had interactive 3D blueprints that they were walking through as if it's like Google Earth.
Yep.
I'm sorry. Way too advanced for 1999. It didn't exist. As I mentioned earlier, we were all in Eric Idle chat rooms on AOL.
making
fun of him.
Trolling.
Trolling him.
Trolling.
I was the original troll.
Yeah, wow. It's all your fault?
It is my fault. I spawned a generation.
You're terrible. But
other than that,
yeah,
we needed that to get him through, as you said, the chompers, which I loved every part of Sigourney Weaver in this scene.
Yeah.
Where she's like, why does this exist? This shouldn't exist. There's no logical reason for this to exist. And they finally get through, and she's like, the writer should be fucking fired.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And it's so funny because that's exactly what happened, where it's like, these aliens built this ship.
Based on the TV show.
Based on a TV show.
It literally flies based off the character that was flying the ship. And that's where he's like, you have to learn how to drive. And he's like, what do you mean learn how to? It's like, it was based on how you did it on the show.
Yeah.
So the character Tommy literally goes and starts watching old episodes of himself flying to learn how to fly the fucking ship.
Yeah, it's so funny. It's so great. And that's part of it.
Because they're trying to get to the Omega 13 or figure out, or no, they're starting to, they need to
reset the something.
Well, the something was going to blow up. Is it the overdrive or
the core?
The core was going to overload and explode the ship.
Right.
So they had to reset it or stop it or something
like
that.
Right, and they had to go through this way.
And they had to go through this, you know, awful, awful scenario.
Yeah.
And they finally get to the room, and it's like, okay, hit the blue button.
Yeah.
And I love it. He's like, is that it? He's like, yeah, why? He's like, I just figured it'd be harder. So they hit the blue button at like 19 seconds, and it just keeps counting.
But it counts all the...
Fantastic sci-fi trope.
Right, it has to go all the way to one and then stop.
Because you have that moment where it keeps counting. They don't know what else to do, so they have their embrace where it's like, I always loved you, and oh, and then it hits one, and they're like,
oh,
it always stops at one. God damn it.
Yeah, it always stops at one, baby.
Damn it, Trek.
It's so funny. And so, they end up stopping the core from overloading, and they save all the aliens from getting sucked out of the airlock, and they bring
Because Alan Rickman kind of goes all Hulk on everybody, where he gets his moment.
Yeah.
And when he has his moment, everyone congratulates Captain Taggart.
Yeah, right.
He's like, God damn it.
Yeah, right. They all congratulate him, and he's buttered
Captain
about
Taggart
it.
Saved us. He's like, what?
What? Yeah. Oh, it's so funny. And so then...
But he just starts going kicking ass on everybody.
Oh, he's just kicking so much ass.
Like, they find him in a hallway, and he's, like, stomping a dude like fucking American History X.
Yeah,
it's bad.
Right. It's bad.
His rubber thing is all busted up. His hair's shooting through it. It's awesome.
And so then after they save the day and everybody, you know, they crash land back at the convention.
Okay. So so I have some thoughts. Well, they have to activate the Omega 13.
Oh, that's right. We have, and that ties it back to the beginning of the movie.
Exactly, because nobody knows what the Omega 13 does. Because as we learned in the opening, it was the lost episode.
Right.
So the Omega 13 was never explained, but it was built with theories and whatnot. And so Justin Long says to him at one point, it basically reverses time. Kind of like what Thanos did at the end of Infinity War,
right,
to get the stone from Vision. He just reverses time by 13 seconds.
Right.
And that's what the Omega 13 does. I'm seeing a lot of Marvel parallels.
Yeah.
I think the Russo brothers just watched a lot of Galaxy Quest.
They just watched Galaxy Quest. So so that's how
Game Command. So Saris shows up, and he's disguised as Tony Shalhoub.
Yeah.
And he kills everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody. So... Tim Allen, you know, has them activate Omega 13, reverses it 13 seconds. If you want a nitpick, they actually reversed it about 2.5 minutes. Anyway,
right.
Moving on. So they reverse it. Tony Shalhoub walks in. Tim Allen whips his ass. And everybody's like, what are you doing? Are you crazy? I mean, he's high, for Christ's sakes.
Yeah, right.
And then he turns into Saris, and they subdue him, and they kill him, and he does like a tuck and roll type deal.
Yeah.
And so now we're flying into the Earth's atmosphere. And they have to separate ships because the ship will fall apart. So all the aliens go on their way. They get a new commander and the guy who's been the leader the whole time with them. And our crew bomb ass down to Earth.
Right.
Okay. So basically, the headline the day after this Galaxy Quest Comic-Con would read as such. 72 dead, 400 injured as douchebag actors make their grand entrance.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
They had a ship the size of basically a 747 that crashed through an auditorium to the stage, taking out booths and tables and chairs and people.
Yeah, the problem is that a lot of the...
The people.
Yeah. The problem with it is that everybody in that audience is far too calm. You know what I mean?
Well,
like,
that's because we're only seeing the ones that lived.
Yeah, right. Well, there's that.
Because they think this is all part of the show, and they're alive.
What show have you ever been at where the structural integrity of the building is compromised for the entrance?
I've been to a lot of clubs, man, and seen a lot of things.
Point proven. Point taken.
I never seen an elephant fly.
No, you never seen an elephant fly? All right. Yeah, that makes sense.
I love those crows.
Yeah,
we can't
racist.
Do that anymore.
Let's do a live action remake of Song of the South.
Yeah, I would love it. Well, it was kind of live action anyway.
Yeah, well, we'll just do it again. We'll call it live action, but it'll be a CGI bunny. You know, like the Lion King. Yeah, Splash Mountain's a hell of a ride.
Splash Mountain's a hell of a ride. How did we get here?
Structural integrity of the building.
Structural integrity of the building. No, I've never been to one.
Yeah. And no, so, I've
I've never been to a show where the building collapsed.
For this building to hit, and, you know, to be fair, the accuracy was definitely on point as they hit the stage, and then they all hop out, and everybody's just cheering.
And they played it up.
Oh, yeah.
Like, these are the best example of Hollywood actors. They didn't care that they murdered 42 people.
Oh, easily.
They were just happy to be there and happy to see people cheering for them.
For them. Yes, after exactly. This harrowing experience. And then, yeah, Sarah shows up.
Well, I love their intros, too, because you had the guy from Kids in the Hall. I forget his name.
Oh, yeah.
But he was the one hosting this convention. And you get Tony Shalhoub coming out, and it's like, and Fred so-and-so with a friend, because he brought the woman with him.
Yeah.
Because that was a thing in a moment, and now she's in the reboot credited as Jane Doe.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
And then Sam Rockwell comes out as Guy Fleegman, we found out later, and he's like, and another crew member.
Yeah.
And he literally just goes, Guy.
Yeah. Hi.
I'm here, everybody.
I'm here.
We get the, and then Cirrus comes out.
Yeah.
Because he's alive still.
And Taggart just tucks, rolls, and fires.
He pulls the ultimate Shatner shot.
Yeah, he does.
And
it's pretty epic.
It explodes. The crowd goes wild.
Yep.
He gives the big dipping kiss to Sigourney Weaver.
Right.
Everyone goes even more wild.
And everybody loves it.
Women are fainting. Men are crying.
Yep.
Pandemonium.
Yeah, and instead of being arrested.
Pandemonium monsoon.
And instead of being arrested, they get a TV show out of it.
They get a reboot. Yes. Yeah. They were sentenced to, I believe, 6.5 months of community theater, and then they got a reboot.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
you
yeah.
know what I mean?
That's exactly what
and
happened.
And that's how we wrapped up Galaxy Quest.
That's Galaxy Quest.
Galaxy Quest, The Next Generation.
Yeah, Galaxy Quest.
With the same cast.
Yeah, it's 15 years later.
Yeah, exactly.
They predicted internet and reboots in this movie.
It's amazing. This is kind of like when we did Demolition Man.
Yeah.
It's amazing these underrated sci-fi type movies, how accurate they were.
Yeah.
Like Demolition Man, go back and watch it. It's in the archives, newagentstars.com. But go watch the movie and think about all the stuff in that movie, which was made in the mid-90s.
Right.
That we have now.
Oh, yeah.
And will have in the future.
My buddy Ken was at a Taco Bell in Las Vegas, and it had alcoholic beverages, and it looked like Demolition Man.
I believe I saw that Taco Bell. I didn't stop in that Taco Bell, but I saw that Taco Bell. Self-driving cars.
Yep.
Basically FaceTime.
Seashells.
Seashell shitters. She sells shitters by the seashore.
Know. Here's the thing. I've been to Portland, Maine, and that's hippie
Portland.
Capital.
I've been to Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, that's even more hippie.
They didn't have seashells.
Yeah, well, it was organic seashells.
They just had rocks.
Ooh.
Rocks.
Pointed rocks.
Rocks, yeah.
Gross.
And yeah, so this movie did the same thing, basically. I mean, you look at Justin Long's computer and internet speed and his ability to video chat with his friends at lightning fast speed with no buffering.
They had LTE.
No oh, fuck that noise. They weren't even 14.4 dial-up. They
no,
were like,
no, they weren't.
They were whatever was lower than that. I think it was, 28 or something?
Sure.
I don't even know. But it was awful.
Oh, of course.
Dial-up was not a fun time to be part of the internet.
No, it wasn't.
And they were at lightning speed. They invented Fios, basically.
They did. They invented Fios.
They invented fiber optic internet.
I liked it. I love it. It's a fun movie.
It's an absolute delight.
You should go see it if you have not seen it. If you haven't seen it, I'm sorry for spoiling it for you, but that's kind of what we do here.
Watch this episode.
That's kind of what we do here on That Movie Show. We haven't discussed next week.
No.
But I'm going to throw it out there since it's another anniversary, 30th this time, Major League.
Okay, I've never seen it.
You've never seen Major League?
No.
Wow.
I've never seen it.
This could either be awesome or a Planes, Trains, and Automobiles type disaster.
Very fun. Which one's it going to be? Am I going to say Planes, Trains, and Automobiles isn't as good as Rookie of the Year?
I don't know.
We'll have to find out.
I don't know. So coming up next week, Major League for its 30th anniversary. And, of course, you can follow That Movie Show, hashtag it on all forms of social media. You can follow us on social media at Mike Wendt, at LeahNAI. Audio and video archives are found at newageinsiders.com. Subscribe to this on all podcasting apps. It doesn't matter what it is. Whatever you're listening to this on, you probably already are subscribing, so thank you.
Yeah, right.
But tell your friends, whatever they listen to their podcasts on, hit the subscribe button on New Age Insiders.
And you know what? I'm gonna say it. Within the next few weeks, we're gonna try and make it a little bit easier.
Oh, I think so.
We're gonna try and make it a little bit easier for you guys to find.
That would be great for me doing these end plugs.
Yeah. So it can still be on NAI Pop, but we're gonna try and find a different way to get it.
We're gonna do a thing.
Yeah, stay tuned.
Yeah, and we also do that radio show, That Movie Show on North Shore 104.9, sponsored by Showcase Cinemas, and we have some plans coming up for that as well.
Yeah, we do. There's a very, very popular movie that's coming out at the end of the month.
Yeah, if you haven't heard. And they're doing a whole bunch of stuff with it, and we're going to be doing a whole bunch of stuff with them.
I got a fun thing to talk to you about with that.
Ooh, that's a tease for all of you.
It's a very, very funny tease.
I like it.
But I'm waiting for this.
Things are down the pipe.
Yes.
So let's get to those things, and we will see you next week with Major League.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.